And welcome to another episode of General Nerd Sense, the podcast from Shield Wall Productions, where we talk about anything and everything generally nerdy. And on this episode, we have myself, John.
And Jacob.
Yes, and keeping in tune with our general tabletop role-playing D&D tear, in the past we've done the classic character archetypes, you know, the wizard, the barbarian, the paladin, and all the, and that's more on the rules side of things, kind of go through the rules and the different paths that those sort of things click. But we've also done character spotlights, which is more on the role-playing, character-building aspect things. We started with the Inquisitor.
And the Witch Hunter.
And the Witch Hunter, specifically in the same episode. And on this, we're going to be doing similar format, but with the Barbarian, the Raider, and the Berserker. Kind of the two classic hallmarks of the Barbarian character archetype.
We can't do a character spotlight without doing the Inquisitor and also the Barbarians, because
to start off with, because
yeah,
that is literally the two of us in a nutshell. Now, typically, when people go for Barbarians, whether they mean to or not, they kind of end up kind of subconsciously molding their Barbarian to at least to a certain extent after Vikings, because they are, to be frank, kind of the quintessential Barbarians in our current cultural zeitgeist. Not only because of the historical significance, but also probably due in large part to the very well-made History Channel TV show, Vikings. But they are the most prominent kind of Viking in just general wider knowledge. Sure, there are people who make their barbarians kind of their own home, you know, version of style, but after a certain point, there is kind of a bit of overlap between those two styles of barbarians. So we'll be using the Vikings as a baseline and building off from there, conversationally speaking.
Yeah. I'd say the only other type would probably be, like, the Conan the Barbarian type.
Right.
But, you know, for historical context and stuff, you can, you know, kind of just absorb a little bit of history and historical flair to it.
Right. And as far as your, let's say, Dungeons & Dragons Pathfinder-style barbarians, they're more often that kind of model, at least off the visual aesthetic of the stereotypical Viking, the furs and pelts and stuff like that, and that is ultimately a little bit of erroneous, but it serves its purpose, serves its point, whatever.
Yeah.
So with that in mind, we'll start with kind of the quintessential barbarian, the Berserker. Everyone's favorite madman.
Yeah.
So quick recap, a Berserker is someone who goes buck fucking wild, specifically in combat. They get really fucking, they've got breathtaking anger management issues, specifically in combat.
Oh boy, here I go killing again.
Yep, they just love killing. They fight in this kind of trance-like battle frenzy, paying no heed to the physical injuries they sustain until that frenzy is kind of worn off. It's not even adrenaline, it goes past adrenaline, goes past natural adrenaline. The kind of stereotypical or widely erroneously known is that, you know, they get hopped up on mushrooms and booze. When, according to archaeological finds, it's more likely that they used henbane, because apparently rubbing henbane petals on the skin is a wee bit stronger than shrooms. It kind of numbs pain receptors and gives you apparently a mild sensation of flying.
Ooh, that'd be fun to go flying through combat with
with a big fuck-off axe, yeah. And again, speaking of that, that's kind of their hallmark weapon. They've used, you know, the big two-hander, but they also use, you know, the single hand axe with the shield. Any weapon will do for your berserker standpoint as far as your character creation goes. Personal preference, really.
Yeah. I've also seen them with dual axes, daggers.
If they can go into a frenzy with it, they'll use it.
Yeah.
You won't really see berserkers with spears, but
I'd like to see berserker with clubs.
It's not that far out of the realm of imagination, because apparently, according to historical sagas, that's kind of the only weapons berserkers would really respond to. Because historically speaking, berserkers didn't give a flying fuck about anything made of iron or even fire or steel or anything like that. They would seem to glance or often wouldn't do anything, but you hit them with a club and they're like, fuck that noise, and they back off.
Yeah.
So.
And I mean, clubs, they're effective. They've worked for pretty much ever. It's one of the earliest weapons.
Those Romanic tribesmen kicked the shit out of three Roman legions in the Teutoburg Forest with glorified firewood.
I mean, and the reason for that is
it works.
Kinetic energy doesn't care about armor.
No.
It just does.
It just is.
They don't think it be like it is, but it do.
It do. as far as your Viking, not even, just as far as your Berserker type character, Viking notwithstanding, but there's kind of different flavor, you know, Battle Rage or whatever, but your bog standard Berserker probably is typically only going to get really worked up in combat. They'll be a little unsociable outside of combat, but they'll otherwise have their head screwed on for the generally well enough under the circumstances. My personal favorite style of Berserker outside of the Vikings would be the specifically pre-heresy World Eaters. Now, they went Berserker because of their neural implants, the Butcher's Nails, which would deaden all pleasure responses in the brain, chemically speaking, except for in combat. That would, that's the only time they would feel, they get the feel-good dopamine. Outside of combat, they kind of, the longer they've had the nails, they kind of don't really respond to anything, but they're capable of critical thinking and thought, whatever. But as soon as they get the even anywhere sort of sense of combat, that's when the nails start kicking and firing up, ticking, buzzing, whatever, how they describe it, and they just, they lose themselves. They're going to go, everything go red, and oh boy, here I go, killing again.
I'd love to see a, like, Berserker character who is just, like, the most, like, nicest and just, you know, calm-mannered person outside of combat, and then, you know, the first combat session you go into, you just turn into a killing machine.
Phil Coulson. You're thinking of Phil Coulson from the Avengers. Yeah. I mean, like, his little one-off short in the gas station where he's going and filling up on gas, whatever, goes in the debating between two donuts, neck, whatever, and the place gets robbed, and he kicks the shit out of the robbers, out of the thieves, the criminals, whatever, kicks the holy shit out of them, and then puts his, you know, snacks on the table, pays for it, goes out before the pump's even done. Phil Coulson, the most polite man in the Marvel Universe.
Yeah. Michael Crumbopulous, or...
Crumbopulous Michael, yeah. From Rick and Morty. Yeah, just, you know, women, children, old men, I don't care. I just love killing.
Yeah.
That could be fun. Definitely, it's an option. If you want a more kind of more cerebral Berserker type, I very much point to pre-heresy Karn the Betrayer, or even post-heresy Karn the Betrayer, because again, because of the Butcher's Nails, he would only go buck wild in combat. Otherwise, he was kind of the only one who could talk to Angron that Angron would listen to. The angriest of all the Primarchs, the one who had the originals, it was just his brain was melting under them. Angron was the one who would listen to Karn, and Karn would be able to talk to him. And served as his equerry in kind of the diplomat side of things for the World Eaters Legion. Very interesting character, but still very much a Berserker.
Yeah. And I think it would be important as well to, when you're developing your Berserker character, to determine what causes you to go into that Berserker rage.
Right. Is it substance, you know, some sort of, you know, substance, you know, mushrooms or henbin or booze?
Liquor, yeah.
Or is it a mental state, you know, did you get worked up into a frenzy, you just love battle? Or is it kind of more of a religious trance sort of thing?
Yeah. Because there's multiple ways to do that. I mean, you can do it from anything from, you know, just standing there, like, having to bash your head against your shield until you, like, get into that state of mind.
Or just beating your chest and just getting yourself hyped up. And just, like, most people, you know, most warriors get themselves hyped up and feel like, all right, I'm ready to go. And you just kind of keep pushing until you just start almost quite literally foaming at the mouth.
Yeah. Or you could do it the religious trance sort of way where you have to go through, like, a little ritual before, know, like, and the ritual.
Some sort of sacred incantation or mantra, whatever, that just gets you into that frenzied state of mind. Now, important thing about Berserkers kind of across the board is they do very much, to say the least, have a bit of trouble recognizing friend from foe. You point them at the enemy, and then you stay the fuck out of their way. They're very much the Shock Troopers' line breakers. They're always going to lead the charge whether or not you really want them to.
Yeah.
Because they're that eager, they've got that much battle lust. So if you really want to get into the character of a Berserker, maybe don't actively go for your fellow party members, but tell them to stay behind you.
Yeah. If they get in front of you, that's their mistake.
Yes. Don't, you know, maybe, you know, have, if you're the GM, if this is sort of situation, bring it down to a will check, a willpower check.
Mm-hmm.
Just to see if the Berserker can rein themselves in to not smite their friend in the process.
On other notes, this is why I've built my Berserker character to have the lowest in willpower.
Right. If you really want to counter that GM play ahead of time, just like, what will save?
I have a -3 to my will.
I'll play with this handicap throughout the entire campaign. Sure, hit me with stuff that makes me take a will check even outside of battle. I don't care. It'll be funny in battle when I smite the stupid mage because he got too close in combat.
You're a glass cannon. You should have stayed away.
Mm-hmm.
and I'm the person who breaks the beer bottle.
Yes. Again, though, outside of combat, berserkers can very much be cerebral characters. They'll be a kind of bit more subdued, maybe a bit more huffy.
Yeah.
But that isn't to say that they're just always angry all the time.
No.
They'll just have, you know, they'll have patience, just not all that much of it.
Mm-hmm.
But they won't go berserk kind of the drop of the hat.
Yeah.
You know, there needs to be kind of a certain set of circumstances that lead them to that point. And the same should be for your berserker as well. You know, don't just fly off the handle at any given point, because that's a quick way for rocks to fall on you.
Yeah, it's, I'd like to describe it as, you know, they're not gasoline. You won't just hold an open flame near them and they'll combust. You know, it, I'd like to imagine berserkers more as like diesel, where like it needs like heat and pressure.
Right.
Like just the right set of circumstances trigger that berserk.
Right.
And then they're going until they're done.
Right. And again, a berserker is a pretty straightforward character.
Yeah.
That doesn't make him any less fun, any less useful, or any less interesting.
Now, like, there's a little bit of room of, like, why did your character go into berserking? Like, you said there's religious contexts, there's...
Yeah, they're historically described as kind of the champion Viking warriors. They just... There are some warriors who just love war.
Yeah.
Berserkers definitely fit the bill for that.
And, I mean, there's room for character development and, like, how your character is made right at the beginning. Like, did they go into it for religious reasons? Did they go into it for honor reasons? Did they do it just because they're the only ones that could, you know, flip that switch?
Or did they do it because they wanted to win glory and renown as the finest warrior of the age?
Yeah.
There's a lot of reasons to get into berserking. You know, it's a pretty straightforward profession, but there's a lot of motivations for it.
Yeah.
There's certainly room for a lot of motivation for it, sure. Or were they just pushed too far?
Now, before the mic started rolling, you mentioned a couple different paths.
Right. So, historically speaking, again, because we're drawing on the Viking historic, with the kind of understanding that this is kind of all past tense accounts not long after the Viking Age ended, because the problem with the Vikings is that Vikings weren't really in the habit of writing anything down. So, a lot of the stuff that we know was written down quite a bit afterwards, after the Christianization of Scandinavia, when, you know, writing things down became common practice. Now, there are three different kinds of berserkers as far as accounts go. There was the straight berserkers, which were the bear warriors. They would wear bear shirts. They're part of the quote-unquote bear cult. In fact, the word berserker is derived from a couple of Old Norse and Old English words, meaning berserk or bear shirt, literally describing what they'd wear into battle. They just wear the pelts of bears, and they would kind of, they seemed to kind of shapeshift a bit from you know, big, strong men to literally men in the bears in the shape of men with the strength thereof.
It almost gives me kind of the Ajax feel from Greek mythology.
Yes, and they were much more the bear warriors are kind of more on the religious side of things, because they maintained religious observances to fight their fighting prowesses. One of the sagas tells of a challenge to single combat that was postponed by a berserker specifically until 3 days after Yule, because it's a holy day for the Vikings. Like, I'm not fighting on Yule. I'm not fighting on basically Viking Christmas.
Yeah.
Like, there are things that need to be observed before I can kick your ass.
I need to go deliver some presents.
Yeah, like, I need to deliver the presents to all the good boys and girls, and then I'll kick the shit out of you afterwards.
Imagining Santa, like, with just, like, the bear pelt, with half bear head, like, after Christmas, just dyed his beard black again.
Yes. We might actually do a different, you know what, never mind. we'll talk about that in possibly a different podcast, because that's an interesting thing. But the berserkers of the bear warriors were subjected to fits of frenzy, and they would howl like wild beasts, foamed at the mouth, and gnawed at the eye, and sometimes even gnawed at their shields prior to and in battle.
Gotta love that lead paint.
Yes, and according to belief, at least, during these fits, they're kind of immune to steel and fire, as we said, and they would go buck fucking wild. But then after the frenzy subsided, they were observed as kind of being weak and tame, you know, and just went back to kind of normal. They would hulk the fuck out, and then just, I'm sorry, that was mean.
It's like that one kid in high school, like, you only saw go off once, but he's straight up, like, throwing a desk across the room. And
right, right.
Like, oh, wow, that was scary.
Right, with regards to the gnawing of the shield, that was part of, you know, how they got worked up, you know, pre-battle, and in the saga of Egil Skallagrim, Skallagrimsson, the most famous of all the Viking skalds from Iceland, he pissed off a berserker.
Which was his first tactical error.
Sort of, but he was also, Egil was very gifted with wordplay, kind of, that's kind of his deal.
Mm-hmm.
So berserker subsequently challenged him to an honor duel, and you know, Egil accepts because honor. And as they're getting ready for it, Egil's just taunting him with just ridiculous amounts of insults and wordplay, and getting him, the berserker so worked up, you know, he's gnawing on a shield. Not only is the berserker gnawing on the shield, he bites a chunk off in his rage. Problem is, he gets a little too angry and doesn't fight as properly as he would otherwise would have. And that's another interesting point to kind of bring your berserker to life a little bit more, is if, you know, maybe talk with your GM on how to figure out some sort of table, you know, how berserk are you right now? How pissed off are you? Can you fight properly? If you're too pissed off, you're going to take some hits to your combat prowess because you're not fighting as precisely as you normally would when you're in kind of that nice zone. You know, you're making sloppy mistakes, so you're just too fucking mad to think to fight properly.
You know, you have to set up the scale. Where on the are you on the Krumbopulous Michael side of the scale, or are you on the PCP Florida Man side of the scale?
Are you in the zone? Are you the Red Butchers of the World Eaters, where you are a killing machine? However, you are all attack, no defense. Rules-wise speaking, the Red Butchers universally are hit by anything on threes because they're not defending themselves. It's all attack. They're not fighting in defense.
Give me that pain.
It's just all attack output. They're not thinking to fight in defense. They're just raw attack, no defense, whatever. So as far as your berserker character goes, maybe talk with your GM about seeing about throwing some sort of that flavor in. The next path of berserkers was the Ufindar, I guess. Wolf warriors. Like the berserkers, they wore wolf pelts instead. They were commonly encountered by the Romans, and they seem to appear most frequently in the Volsung saga.
Mm-hmm.
And they were said to wear the pelt of a wolf when they entered battle, and they were sometimes described as specifically Odin's special warrior. So if you've got an Odin-like figure in your D&D campaign, or Pathfinder campaign, whatever, that's who your berserker is going to be most dedicated to. And again, like the berserks, the bear warriors, they didn't give no flying fucks about fire or iron. But you hit them with clubs, and they're gonna fuck off.
What about incense and iron?
Yeah, I see what you did there. And the last of them were the Svinvilking, the Boar Warriors.
Battle Swine.
Kinda, yeah. But the Wild Boars found on all sorts of... actually, I'm looking at that right now. That's literally...
A name.
Yeah, Battle Swine. Hildisvini, or Battle Swine, which was the wild boar owned by Freya. Yeah, battle swine. You nailed it, Jacob. You didn't mean to, but you did.
Boar are fucking vicious, too.
Yes.
Like, if you know, wolves, you know, bears, everyone thinks of them as being, you know, vicious, but holy fuck, boars will try to kill you dead.
Yes.
They are territorial shit.
Yes. The boar warriors typically fought at the lead of a battle formation, known as the boar's head, which was wedge-shaped, and two of the champions formed kind of the quote-unquote snout. And they've been described as the masters of disguise and of escape with kind of intimate knowledge of the landscape. So you can kind of do kind of a hybrid of berserker and ranger there if you want to go with the boar warrior. Battle swine. And again, similar to the bear warriors and the wolf warriors, they use the strength of their animal, the boar, as the foundation of their martial arts. So those are the kind of three historical inspirations. Again, just ideas for you to take for your own D&D or Pathfinder, whatever campaigns. If your barbarian culture that you're drawing your character from has similar sorts of sacred animals, or if you want to flesh it out, do it. But those definitely good starting points, and they all got their different hallmarks.
Yeah. And there's a lot of, like, you know, just aesthetic flair you can take with them.
Right.
You know what would be cool? Berserker, who gets, you know, who starts, the rage in himself by just taking, like, animal's blood and pouring it over him.
It wouldn't be outside the realm of possibility of something that happened historically speaking. They just didn't make it into the documents. Because, again, the Vikings didn't write anything down.
But it gives you a lot of room for creative muster. Oh, yeah. Like, you know, you could take that, what was that plant called? The
Henbane,
you know. A mixture of just, like, pig's...
Henbane and blood.
Yeah, henbane and pig's blood, and you just, like, start pouring it over yourself and go into, like, blood frenzy.
If you want to go, like, super over the top with it, or just have the handful, whatever, that just smear across your face for just the war paint that also gets you frenzied.
Yeah.
Or even if you want to go super hardcore with it, don't just carry... You know, because carrying around blood in the into your Pathfinder campaign, that'll be a little difficult in terms of preservatives.
Yeah.
But you know where there's an ample supply of fresh blood?
Inside those vein thingies?
In your own hands. So you get the henbane that you rub on your palms, ritually cut your palm, and then your own blood is war paint, then you go berserk.
God, I forget that Adult Swim show where there's, like, this wizard, and he just, like, they're getting everyone hyped up, and he just cuts open his hand and smears it across his face, and he's like, let it begin!
Again, great way for a berserker to get to set the tone for how that particular encounter is going to go.
He's going to have a lot...
If the situation's appropriate, maybe not if the town guard asks, hey, can we have a word with you? Maybe don't break out your long knife and go, let it begin! It's like, we just want to talk to you.
I mean, that's kind of fitting for that scene, though, because it was, like, completely over the top. It was just
completely inappropriate response for the situation at hand. Yeah.
It's one of my favorite gifts of all time.
Again, if you're going to go over that, do so wisely, because, again, the more you do that kind of just grotesquely inappropriate reaction to a situation, the closer rocks are going to come to falling on your head.
Yeah. You could also have, like, you know, if you have a bard in your party... And he has, like, war drums, you know, like, you could use the war drums as part of the, like, way to get into
you
your...
hyped up.
Yeah.
Yep. You know, slow rhythm, just dum, 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 dum. Just as you get hyped up. Yep. Mm-hmm. That'll work. That'll do.
Yeah. Personally, I like the aesthetic of, like, maybe a tiny, like, buckler with, like, bevel in the middle.
Sure.
And then, you know, just, like, either, like, two-handed. Because, you know, two weapons are always better than one.
Because two is more than one.
Yeah.
Can't fault the logic.
But, you know, if you go with one of those small, like, bucklers that attaches to, like, your forearm, and you can have two weapons, and
would you say that it buckles to your forearm, Jacob?
Da-da-da-da-da-da. Bam! I always love the, like, tiny buckler, because when, like, so, you know, you see a warrior in rage, and he just starts pounding his shield edge into someone.
Yup. Yep, because... And again, we can talk a little bit about how you put even the character flair into your fighting style in terms of, because the more you get into character, not even just outside of combat, in combat, just, you know, describing what you're doing, like, oh, you know, hit with that, but the more creative you get with, the more in character you get with it, your GMs will fucking love you for it.
Yeah.
People don't forget, shields are as much of a weapon as anything else.
Yeah.
They've got that nice hard rim, sometimes, more often than not, encased in nice... sturdy metal. You punch him with the rim of that, like, yeah.
Again,
the shield can be as much of a weapon as your axe or your sword or whatever else you're using.
Like, people don't understand. Like, personally, I love bucklers. They're small enough where you can deflect things, but at the same time, you use them as basically an iron fist, because inside they have, like, a little handle right in that, like, protruding bevel in the middle.
Right. And the shield boss.
Yeah, boss. Sorry. And then
like a boss.
But, you know, you can sharpen the rims of your shield, and you can just use them to hammer in blows.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, with your berserk, you're probably not going to be the most efficient in your attacks.
Yes and no, depending on how you're kind of styling it, because...
Yeah.
Yeah, you're going buck wild, but you also don't want to leave anything behind you that can come back up behind you.
Yeah.
When you're... taking on foes, you're making sure they're not getting back up. And because you're berserk, you're doing so very quickly, so you have to do so quite efficiently. The berserkness, the frenzy comes from the raw speed of it, the raw ferocity, the raw relentlessness of it. You know, you're going for, yes, you're lots of brute strength and, you know, hyper-violence, but you're doing so in a very efficient way so that whatever you hit ain't getting back up to hit you back once you move on.
I'd also say, like, choose your weapons carefully.
Yes.
Because...
friendly fire isn't.
Yeah, friendly fire isn't, but also, you know, different weapons are going to impact your speed and movement through a battlefield.
Yes.
If you're going with axes, your axes could very well get buried into enemies where you'll have to rip them out.
Rip them out, yeah.
And make you more exhausted, whereas...
it depends on the kind of axe attack, because you're using the big two-handers, even just kind of the... you can say like a big long Dane axe, or even just kind of the smaller two-hander, but there's still a two-hander. It's going to have a bit more heft to it, and it's going to bury itself a lot more deeply when it cleaves into an enemy. But it, again, it's going to bury itself a bit more deeply when it buries itself into an enemy. But if you've got a nice little hand axe in the shield, it's a lot easier to wedge your way out, because that's when you're going kind of the more surgical precision strikes.
Yeah. Now, I'd also say, like, as you go through combat, you know, kind of focus your targets.
Right.
Now, I always like...
which is kind of seems like contradictory advice for a berserker.
Yeah.
You'd think that they'll go after anything that's in front of them. And that can be very well how you play a berserker. But if you want to do a berserker efficiently and interestingly and helpfully to your party, because it ain't all about you.
Yeah.
Focus your targets. Anyway, go on.
Now... you could also play your berserker as kind of a smaller man as well. Like, kind of do the Gurkha approach. Small, angry man with big knife and smiling.
I mean, not even just talking about straight race of men here.
No.
There's plenty of different races in D&D Pathfinder. The dwarven berserkers are totally a thing. Sure, they're going to kind of go from over the, you know, two-handed axes. But you know what else dwarves love? Hammer time. They're going to have big fuck-off sledgehammers.
Warhammers are often underappreciated.
Very much so. I entirely agree. Especially when they're magic.
Yeah.
Especially when they're one-handed magic hammers that when you throw them, they come back to you no matter how far you throw them. And they shoot lightning.
You know, also, if it's a magical item, you can make people thunderstruck.
Ayy!
But, you know, if you go with a somewhat smaller in stature berserker, you can always have the paladin or the biggest person in the party take them and just throw them.
Unless they're a dwarf, Jacob, because no one tosses a dwarf.
Dwarves also weigh a fuck ton.
This is also true, but also no one tosses a dwarf and don't tell the elf.
I think that's like something that a lot of people don't understand. Dwarves are...
Jacob, I'm disappointed that reference went over your head.
I think I chose just not to listen.
Yeah, well, it's funny to me, and I'm sure other people laugh, so that's what's important.
But, like, dwarves are very dense. Like,
in a lot of ways.
Yeah. But also, like, they...
I see them as kindred spirits.
Like, and I'm not even just talking about, like, muscle and stuff like that, but in...
I'm not either, Jake.
In fantasy lore, their bones are a lot denser than human bone.
Yes. And they're also very pig-headed and stubborn.
Yeah.
Mentality speaking.
Yep. But Dwarven Berserkers are always fun to play.
Yes. There's a couple of different... again, there's a lot of ways to do your Berserkers. I'll touch a little bit here on the Battle Rager specifically, just because I want to tell my favorite Dwarven Battle Rager story. And it was a Dwarven Battle Rager who was wearing all plate armor. He didn't have any weapons per se, because his plate armor at the joints and all the important parts was covered in spikes. When he would go into Battle Rage, he would just spin to win. You would just throw himself in the mat and just start spinning around, because he's covered in spikes.
You spin me right round.
Baby, right round. Like. But he got jumped by some sort of, like, manta creature or whatever. And, you know, something that'll hug him and do damage or whatever. And he's like, so it's wrapped itself completely around me? The GM's like, yeah. He's like, what are you doing? He's like, stop, drop, and roll. He's like, why? He's like, I'm covered in spikes, and it's wrapped itself all the way around me. Yes, it may be doing damage to me, but now it's got... the full weight of a dwarf in plate mail, spiked plate mail, rolling all around it, spiking it on the ground as he rolls. I'm doing more damage to it per roll than it's doing to me over time. And that got the thing to let go and fuck off.
Now,
remember, kids, stop, drop, and roll.
That is an interesting point. Like, usually with berserkers, you see them in lighter armor. They're not a big fan of the heavier mail.
Both in fantasy and in historical context, they would eschew... chainmail or any sort of real armor. other than pelts and hides.
Yeah.
More often than not, they would go bare-chested. Some Germanic warriors from the Roman era would just go straight naked.
Yeah.
Both because they're just that fearless and just, you know, literally swing their dick around a bit. And it's also hypothesized for kind of sort of practicality reasons, because they didn't really have much in the way of armor other than their shields. So, you know, they wear clothes, whatever. But if you get stabbed, and let's be real here, laundry washing wasn't quite as thorough and clean as it is today. So you get spiked with something in the heat of battle, you know, covered in, you know, dirt and mud and grime, whatever. You get that bit of dirty cloth in the wound. That wound is now infected. But if you get stabbed just on bare skin, the risk of infection is slightly, ever so slightly, lessened.
There's a more important reason, too.
Swinging your dick around.
If someone is trying to defend against you, you win nothing. You're fighting a naked man. You win, you kill the naked man. You lose,
you got killed by a naked man.
Exactly. There is nothing to gain from fighting a naked man, probably covered in mud and blood and shit. There's just nothing to win.
It must be said, a raging erection. Literally, yeah. Raging. Now, because your party will probably need to go into more civilized places, won't be confined to the wild, and you don't want to be left outside the city gates, because outside the city gates there aren't taverns, maybe invest in a kilt. Because then you don't have to wear pants, yeah. But you still have the means to swing your dick around.
You just do the Tarzan thing.
At the very least, a loincloth.
Yeah.
You know, something to, you know.
I mean, how else are you going to move around such massive balls?
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, interestingly enough, you brought up the spiked armor.
Yeah.
I like that. Now, you know, all the, you know, listeners out there, go and look up Siberian bear hunting armor. It is armor that is literally like nails.
It's basically covered in roofing nails.
Yeah. And the idea is if a bear swipes at you with a paw, it now has a handful of nails.
Yes.
And it was very effective. And it's very light armor because it's literally just like light leather with nails and tacks sticking through it.
Yes.
You could do that as a berserker and it looks fucking scary.
Yes.
I mean, there's a thing to be said about having a couple spikes on you. There's right. Another thing to be said to looking like a human porcupine.
Yes. And that other thing to be said is, hug me.
No.
Come here. Daddy wants a hug.
Oh, God.
No!
Yeah. Would make it difficult if you're doing that as a dwarven or smaller in stature character for anyone to throw you.
True.
But if they've got the hit points to do it, why not?
No, you just have a permanent little leash tied around you so they pick you up and swing you and just, like, let go.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Got a safety handle so that people can just, yeah.
No, you brought up dwarves, but what's interesting is you never see elven berserkers.
No.
I think they're just too civilized. You could probably do a...
Dainty knife-eared bastards.
You could probably do a pretty raging dark elf berserker.
Berserker type. The thing is, I think the elves kind of have their own style of berserker, and that's their war dancer types.
Yeah.
Where they kind of do it, you know, they're, you know, blade masters or whatever. They kind of... Berserkers imply much more brute force and frenzy, whereas the elves would... Well, they're going to do it... They're going to be elves about it. And yeah. They're going to make it dainty art form ballet that's hyper-violent in its own way, but it's not the same. It's not berserk.
It's kind of similar, but it just doesn't feel right.
They're doing the same raw kind of damage output, but it's not a berserk frenzy. It's a carefully measured, orchestrated art form, which is cool, but it's not a berserker.
Yeah.
Very true. If you want to allow an elven berserker, man, they better be prepared to justify it.
Every elf they come into contact hates them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, also with berserkers, I feel like you should have your own stylized flair of what you do while berserking. Is it just a path of pure destruction? Or do you make something intricate?
Or do you make them suffer?
Like, there's a thing to be said, like, you know, you can just go straight at them and cut through them, like...
Just lopping off heads.
Yeah. But now...
Bunyan style.
If you finish the battle... And then they're all arranged, all their bodies have fallen in a certain way.
Yeah, that'd be very interesting.
You could almost make art out of, like, the bodies of the people you've killed.
If your GM is kind enough to accidentally give you an ongoing villain that keeps asking you what his name is, just like, oh, I'm going to spell it out. Cut his henchmen apart, and just as you know, you're berserking through, the bodies are falling in such a way that you spell that recurring villain's name out in the bodies of his henchmen.
I'm kind of glad you can.
Deadpool style!
I'm glad you kind of got where I was going with that.
Oh,
but
yeah.
You could make cool stuff with that. Like, you could just, like, you know, whether or not make your symbol or, like,
write your name.
Yeah. Do your initials.
Yeah.
Or just paint the ground with blood.
Jacob, that's going to happen anyway.
Yeah. No,
that's kind of the unavoidable part of it.
Now, what's interesting about that is I was actually reading a book on, like, just combat history in general. Like, the amount of blood and gore on battlefields isn't something to scoff about. Like, we think with modern ballistic weapons, they...
If anything, it's kind of understated.
Yeah. Because modern ballistic weapons, they don't cause as much blood loss as, like, blunt or, stabbing weapons. Because with stabbing weapons, you're ripping in, you're ripping out, and most people on the battlefield die from hemorrhaging blood.
Yes.
So there is a lot of blood on that battlefield.
Yes.
So if your berserker isn't covered in blood, you're probably doing it wrong.
Or you're fighting mechanical constructs. Or things that don't have blood. At which point, after battle's end, your berserker should probably be a little bit disappointed. You'd be like,
no, you can still get covered in, oil like Samurai Jack.
I understand this, but, like, you get what I'm saying. Like, if it's something that doesn't have some sort of bodily fluid, whatever. Like, your berserker should be bummed that he's not covered in the blood of his enemies.
And if you're fighting robots, they might have hydraulic fluid, which is typically red.
This is true.
It's blood red.
But you get what I'm saying, Jacob.
Funny enough, with Samurai Jack, the reason they have all that oil and stuff is to get past, like, the, you can't have blood in a children's show.
Right.
For the rating.
Right, right. Yeah.
If you replace it with blood, it's a lot more gory.
Yes.
But I think that kind of covers the Berserker, but what about...
Thoroughly.
What about the Raider? Now, the Raider is a little bit more civilized when...
A little more civilized... I mean, that's an understatement here, Jacob. Is... Well, actually, that's not really it.
They're kind of... They're all savages.
In the context of the baseline starting point that we started with Vikings, the Raider is, yes, a little bit more civilized. No bones about it, no matter how much you want to romanticize Vikings, whatever, they were a brutal, savage, terrible kind of people. The important distinction is that the Vikings weren't the culture. Scandinavians and Northmen with the culture. The Vikings was the path that they went on. It was the path of the Viking.
It's more or less the mercenary path.
No, it was the raider. It was basically their word for the pirate. The one they would take, go off raiding, those were Vikings. They went on the path of the Viking. They were the ones raiding. Sure, they served as mercenaries here and there, but being a Viking does not necessarily mean that you are a mercenary.
I don't know. I personally take the mercenary...
Jacob, I know more about this than you.
I don't know, just, like, from syntax, like, I take mercenary as someone who makes money from war, which is what raiders did.
Okay.
I understand the pillaging and the murdering, and, yeah.
Jacob, I know more than you about this, all right? Yes, sometimes Vikings would end up becoming mercenaries for whatever land they just kicked the shit out of. But being a Viking does not equate mercenary. It just doesn't. Like, being a mercenary, you go and you're selling your services as a sword for hire to someone else. And you're getting paid for it. No, the Vikings, they go and take whatever ain't nailed down, basically. That does not equate mercenary, Jacob. Jacob, I know more about this than you.
But what do mercenaries do when they don't have someone to pay them? They take everything that isn't nailed down. Look at the Hundred Year War with France.
I understand this, but... Anyway. The Vikings were raiders. It was their word for the pirates. But from that standpoint, as much as they were raiders, because they didn't have the same sort of worldly knowledge as the rest of Europe had, because they hadn't really come into contact with the Roman Empire, they didn't really know much outside the world of Scandinavia. They'd heard whispers and rumors of, lands to the west and all this sort of thing, but it was only hearsay. So when they went sailing off, it was kind of into the unknown. There wasn't any sort of guaranteed certainty that they'd find other wealthier lands to plunder. It could be just fairy stories, for all they knew. But they went anyway, because the only way to make sure that the place actually exists is to sail there.
Mm-hmm.
So they'd go, and when they get there, they'd take anything that's not nailed down.
So they're magpies. Bloody magpies.
Quite literally. no, they're very much raiders. And there's a difference between being a Viking raider and being a standing professional soldier. Because,
mm-hmm.
yeah, you go on Viking raids, but when you come, that was during the summer when it was warm enough to sail through those cold seas. And the same could be said for, depending on where your raider character comes from, like, okay, if you come from, I don't know, you know, a hotter, arid climate, cool, you go raiding in the winter when it's cool enough to survive the scorching heat of the desert wherever you're going, and then you summer in safe places away from the heat where you can take shelter or whatever. Similarly, you know, come from, you know, more Scandinavian climates, whatever.
If I remember from historical context, they usually left in, like, the early spring and came back in the fall.
Yes. And then, and they wintered and they did all sorts of
things. And it wasn't every year. It was every couple years, generally.
It would depend on village to village and
clan. Yeah, and recouping losses and...
Pretty much.
Yeah.
But your raider will be a little bit more subtly nuanced. It's not sort of all for the sake of blood and glory.
No.
The Viking raiders were very much kind of accidentally explorers at the same time. But they, you know, go out in search of places with wealth and riches, and they go and pillage and plunder at first. But then they went in search of land, new places to settle, because Scandinavia was getting crowded. That's kind of what kicked off the Viking Age, is that they were running out of room for the population boom that was going on at the time. They couldn't feed everyone. They didn't have the land to support the kind of meager crops they could sow from year to year. Like, okay, we can go and get rich and whatever, but now we're kind of running out of logistics to support a society here, so we're going to go and colonize instead.
Mm-hmm.
So your raider could be kind of a lead scout for that. You know, like, I'm looking for places to new place for my booming population growth of people to settle.
Yeah.
Or it could be just, I want some gold and silver, and I'm bigger and stronger than you, so hand it over.
Yeah. Now, with raiders, what typically did they use as weapons?
So Vikings specifically, they very much favored the axe because it was such a versatile thing. Mm-hmm. Like, an axe is not just a weapon, it is very much a tool. They could use, and there wasn't a whole lot of variation in the hand axes. You know, they have the hand axes for combat, but then they, you know, very similar sort of design for the building and maintaining, specifically the maintaining of their boats. Because a Viking boat full of raiders, all of them needed to know how to maintain and repair the boat while out on the journey, because that was their only way back.
Mm-hmm.
So they all had the tools to do so, because they all favored the axes, both because it's a very versatile tool, and because iron in particular was kind of a scarce resource in Scandinavia at the time. It wasn't found in these deep veins like in other countries. They found it from the peat bogs. They take these lumps of basically peat moss, stuff it in the furnace, and let it cook in there, cook out all the leafy bits, and they were left with a pretty sizable chunk of very impure iron.
Pig iron.
Not even that, just this lump of very raw, impure iron full of impurities. They hammer that out even more, and they come away with a lump of, not even a lump, a basically about hockey puck-sized chunk of pretty pure iron. Not great, but pretty pure iron.
Yeah.
That whole process would take about a day and a half. Iron was a very rare and precious commodity, so
still more...
You couldn't use a whole lot of it.
Yeah.
So axes were kind of the way to go. Anything that didn't require a lot of iron to make it into weaponry or tools, whatever, to make it last long. So typically, you wouldn't see swords unless it was in the possession of a very wealthy person, someone of status, a chieftain, chieftains in a circle, a king.
Yeah.
Someone who had the coin to pay for that much raw material to put into the work.
It also depends, because as they went on more raids, they did gather more material.
Sure, sure.
And I mean, still, like you said, it takes a day for that process. It's still exponentially quicker than what you see in, like, Eastern societies like Japan, for example, which... A day would have been like, oh, wow, we could do so much with a day.
Yes. So if you're basing your barbarian raider off of kind of the Viking, they're going to go for the weapons that don't use as much metal material. So your axes, your spears,
You also see that a lot with their armor as well.
Very much on the leather and hide side of things.
They also had
every now and then, but again, only if you were particularly wealthy.
They also had the mail, the sewn mail, like metal shirts.
Again, only if you were particularly wealthy or came from Chieftain or clan that could afford to outfit your raiding party with such.
Mm-hmm.
But again, only if you were particularly important.
On the sword,
because it's still that's still a lot of material and a lot of time put into it. That it was expensive. You went for the kind of the boiled, hardened leather and hides, and even then, not as much as you might think. They kind of depended more on their shields to defend themselves more than anything else. Traditionally speaking, your Vikings weren't really these pelt-clad warriors. Yes, they would wear the pelts and them, mostly for warmth. They would wear kind of simple tunics and trousers and use their shields to defend themselves most. They did make the they speak for the expense of the helmets.
Yeah.
Your barbarian helmet should be very much stylized for a maximum kind of psychological effect. Think of it in a way, because you look at, say, your paladins, whatever, even if they've got the full face helmet, if they don't, they're going to have just kind of, you know, the conical nasal helmet that still kind of shows most of their face. Well, the Viking helmet was described as the spectacle helmet. You know, it had that nasal guard, but it had some other bits on that branched off of it that kind of covered most of the face, that kind of gave the spectacle look.
The manacles, yeah, of the helmet.
Yeah. Hadn't really been seen in the rest of Europe. It just wasn't a thing.
Yeah.
So all you see is just beard, usually,
mm-hmm.
and just eyes, but you couldn't really see the face. It was a very unnerving, unsettling opponent to fight against, because you just and they were fucking huge compared to the rest of fucking huge, like a good head taller than the rest of mainland Europe, because Scandinavians are tall people, and they kind of always have them. They've got the genetic preposition of giants, basically, compared to the rest of Europe, of mainland Europe, of the rest of
especially
Europe
at the time.
So your barbarian should be appropriately styled accordingly. Your barbarian should be fuck huge.
Yeah.
Maybe not a dense wall of muscle, but certainly tall.
And you got to remember, like, if you look at strong men too, they aren't going to be your 8-pack warriors. Like, you know,
no, they got
300.
They got a straight kick because that's raw muscle.
Look at the
Olympic power lifters,
or look at like the mountain. The mountain, he looks like he has a beer belly, but that's
all raw fucking muscle. He could bend you in half like nothing.
Yeah. And if you look at the really strong, bulky warriors, they have some brawn to them. And, you know, it's not just that pure, like, chiseled muscle that you see, you know, like the
body
Spartans.
That's body sculpting, and it's not the same thing. That is aesthetic, but you want raw functional muscle, you're not going to have a lot of muscle, tone definition, but it's going to be dense as hell.
Now, one thing I do hate to see for raiders and Viking characters in general are those stupid horned helmets. The ones that never existed.
So, the reason, fun fact, listeners, if you don't already know, the reason that the stereotypical Viking has the horned helmet is because their Christian victims describe them as these devils from the north. Well, what does the devil have? Horns! So, it's a miscommunication to the ages. Vikings never had horn helmets. It's just woefully impractical.
Yeah.
You got two nice handholds on your head that your opponent can, you know, your opponent blocks your attacks with their shield and then grabs your fucking head, your helmet, and can either yank it off or at least has full control of your body if the helmet is strapped onto you. You're not putting anything your opponent can grab on your helmet. You're just not.
Now, if you do want something stylized on your helmet, go with an animal pelt. Go with a wolf pelt that has, like, you know, right at the bottom jaw cut and skinned. And then you put, you know, the wolf head over the helmet. And then you tie it on. And then you now have a cloak and half wolf head over your head.
Fuck it. Go for a touch of class. Give yourself a horsehair plume.
Ooh.
Why not?
Yeah.
It's a D&D Pathfinder barbarian. It doesn't have to be historically accurate. Because, like, it's fantasy. Do something interesting. Just don't do horns at all. Smack you in the face.
Now, on the side of swords,
reach the internet and through time, just stop that.
Now, if you do go the sword a barbarian route, the swords they generally had were the Spanish design. Because that was, at the time, the most popular design. After the conquest of Spania from the Romans...
Yes and no. It's similar in design, but it is own unique entity. The Viking swords compared to the Iberian swords were longer. They weren't... Because the Spanish, very much kind of Roman gladius style, kind of short stabbing sword, right?
Yeah.
No. I mean, the Viking sword. No, it's similar stylistically, you know, on aesthetic level, but functionally, no. The Viking swords were not stabbing weapons. They could be in a pinch, but they're much more hacking, slashing, cleaving weapons because they're, you know, long, broad blades.
Spanish swords weren't for stabbing.
Jacob, they may look similar, but there was no overlap. There wasn't.
I'm talking from the perspective of double-sided edge, the hilt design, the handle design. Granted, it's a bit of a gap between Roman and barbarian times, but from the stylized, like, it's...
Similar aesthetically, but mostly out of coincidence. That was the most simple kind of inefficiently designed sword that one could make with limited materials and limited technology.
You know, in general, like, sword designs, they... typically keep a lot, like, from as you progress through time, a lot of them, no matter what region you're in, kind of follow the same design.
Again, because of the limitations of technology and just raw efficiency. Now, let's not lead our listeners astray here, Jacob. Just tell them to look up the fucking Viking sword. Why are we going to Spain when we're talking about Viking barbarians? Let them look up the Viking sword, Jacob.
They're the same.
I'm going to smack you. Point is, your barbarian sword, if you're going the sword route, should be kind of a long, broad-bladed sword, and it's very much for hacking, slashing. It's going to be heavier.
And you don't have to go with iron, either, for barbarian swords. Brass was also a common material that was a lot more plentiful.
Not in Scandinavia, man. No, not in Scandinavia. Again, though, this is your D&D, Pathfinder, whatever kind of barbarian, but historically speaking. So this is how arguments started, isn't it, Jacob? Point is, as far as the style of the blade, it's going to be kind of heavier, broad, not on your stabbing end. It's going to be the hacking, slashing. It can stab in a pinch, but that's not really its designed, inherently designed purpose. No.
I mean, I feel like a lot of people also don't realize most swords are designed for hacking. Like,
yes.
Most.
Unless it's a rapier.
Yeah, they're, like, you don't see, like, stabby, pokey swords until, like, chainmail became very prevalent.
Yes.
There's just no reason. You do more damage with a hack than you do with a precision stab.
Yes.
You also create a bigger wound.
Yes. But, yeah, I mean, your options is kind of a regular type for D&D Pathfinder, whatever. It's pretty open.
Yeah.
Spear, sword, axe, single or two-handed.
And, again, I will tell all my listeners, I love spears. People need to use spears more.
Agreed.
Spears are... they're one of the pinnacle weapons, in my opinion, of just melee time period.
There's a reason most of any sort of standing army throughout history was equipped with spears, because it's sharp, stick, easy to make.
It's easy to make.
Pokey, poke, make them fall down.
You have distance between you and your enemy.
Yes.
And they stab, but at distance.
Yes. If you're uncreative. Because a spear at the end of the day, if you're... really want to get the full use out of it, think of it as a 2 meter long sword.
Yeah.
It's still a nice broad...
2 meter long dagger.
Point is, if you've got a spearhead that's kind of not only sharpened at the point, but also on the sides of it, you've got kind of a 2 meter long sword there to work with as far as the half goes. Use that to your advantage. Swing it around. Don't just poke at someone.
Yeah.
Swing it around.
A lot of spears, too, had points at the end of the spears, so once you get closer, you can kind of lift your spear up and stab them. When they're on the ground.
Yes.
People underestimate the spear. The spear is a good weapon.
Yes. Now, as far as your Viking, as far as your barbarian raider invasion, again, you can be just for wealth, riches, exploration, whatever. But it also could be just, I want to go to places that no one's gone before and see what's there.
Yeah.
Because there weren't raiders, but there were wanderers who just like, I don't really... stick around in one place for long, because there's lots of places to go, and I want to see all of them.
In, you know, the Middle Ages, the Dark Ages, when you get a large population of guys who, when there's no wars or anything going on, they get restless. They want to do stuff. So
sometimes you just want to walk. Yeah, not me, but, you know.
You know, people.
People who aren't me.
People who were, you know, not, played outside as a kid.
I did that. I got my fill. Got my fill for a lifetime.
When there isn't anything other to do besides play outside.
Right. Like I said, I got my fill. I'm an indoorsy person now. But the point is, your regulator can very much be a wanderer as well, just to wander, which can lead to a lot of more options for character depth. You can have the options to know more than, say, the common language or your native language plus common. You can learn a lot of, you can have your character know a lot of different languages because you've been to a lot of different places.
Yeah. I also like the idea of, you know, a Viking raider who, like, and characters by design who just want to wander and do things. You know, there's a lot to be said about, you know, the character who is very stylized to be like, I want to fight the big bad because I have tragic backstory, as opposed to the character that's like, I literally have nothing else to do in my life besides go and try to find something fun to do.
I saw the flare, it seemed neat, and thought I'd show up and see what's going on.
Yeah. Pretty much. There's a lot, in my opinion, a lot more natural
character.
Do you have
any other sort of qualifications? It just seemed interesting, so I showed up. All right, you're hired.
Now, I think it should also be said they should be good people at sea as well, because...
Yes, you, well, or just any sort of, you know, long-range navigation, because your raider doesn't necessarily have to be, seaborne.
Yeah.
Again, this is open to your own personal experience, wherever your barbarian is coming from. You know, if you're, again, a little bit of overlap with the ranger here.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, we've talked about this in the ranger archetype. There's going to be a lot of overlap in terms of multi-classing, whatever. Your Viking raider, your barbarian raider... We'll have a lot of work with Ranger because you will just know how to travel long distance efficiently and navigate. But all that said, your Raider won't be just a beat stick. Viking Raiders specifically were prized for and rewarded and encouraged to be as clever and full of ingenuity as possible to solve problems rather than with brute force. So if your party's looking across the thing, your Raider doesn't necessarily have to have a low intelligence score.
No.
You probably should have at least an average or a slightly above average intelligence score just to allow you to get away with some clever ideas.
Yeah.
Like, say you're murked out as part of, you know, some standing army or whatever, and you've been tasked with breaking into the city of Big Bad, whatever. Well, how do we get in? Or just breaking into a city. How do we get in? Well, there's a couple of ways you can do this. I'll borrow these ideas from King Harald's saga specifically. There was one, he came to a town, and he realized, ain't no way we're going to break through these walls, break through these gates. We just don't have the numbers. They're too well defended. So here's what we're going to do. Guys, leave your weapons in camp. We're going to go to the walls just outside of bowshot range, and we're just going to engage in athletic sports, whatever, and we're just going to fuck around within range and show them that we're here. We're not doing anything about it, but we're here, and we're going to do this day after day after day until the defenders just... And they get bored. And they're just, okay. And, you know, sometimes the defender on the walls would taunt them, whatever, and they're like, you know, would call back, you know, good-naturedly, and, you know, sometimes, you know, like, oh, come join us, whatever, you know, like, we're here for a siege, you know, sure, we're besieging you, but, like, we're not going to attack today, like, you know, don't you want to get outside the walls and stretch your legs? And at one point, the defender's like, surely they mean no harm, right? Well, can you hear all the plan for this? Because they all, you know, went with all the, you know, out their armor, without their armoring like that, but they had their weapons hidden under their tunics and cloaks or whatever. So as the defenders opened the gates and came out, whatever, they got jumped, killed, rushed in. Other time, same sort of dealio, get to the city, way too well defended. Carol was like, I got an idea. Tell them all I'm dead. Or rather, that I'm dying. And that, specifically tell their clergyman that when I die, I want to be buried as a Christian. And given all the proper Christian rites. And the local clergyman were like, all right, when he's dead, bring his body to us and we'll, you know, do this favor. As long as you break the siege. You're like, yeah, when our leader is dead, we have no reason to continue the siege. That's just his dying, basically his dying wish. Like, who are we to deny a pagan the option to convert to Christianity? You know.
Yeah.
Strike one, you know. Like, okay, so bring his body to us, but, you know, only a small
honor guard
can accompany, no weapons.
Like, yeah.
Square deal. King Harald, quote unquote, dies. The gates are open, you know, the word is sent, the gates are open, they carry the casket to the gates, and then turn it sideways, long ways, to prop the gates open, King Harald bursts out, and the casket also full of weapons, the honor guard grab those, kill the welcoming party of understandably surprised guards and clergymen, and then the rest of the Vikings come rushing in and take the city.
Yeah.
Shit like that. Be clever. Be ingenuitive.
It is really kind of a Renaissance idea that, like, everyone who came before us was stupider. Like, people were crafty and clever.
Yeah.
They just as crafty and clever as they are now.
Oh, yeah,
it's just an idea that, oh, because it's old, they didn't know what they're doing. No, they were crafty.
They knew exactly what they were doing for the time.
Yeah.
One last example, because this is probably one of my favorites. They came to us, again, same deal. Like, all right, see where the birds from the city come flying out during the day. Catch them. Don't kill them. Just catch them. And then when it's time for them to return to the city of their nest, whatever, we're going to tie little bits of string with burning pitch to them. So they'll fly back to the city and set it on fire.
They'll fly back to all their nests in the
and set the place on fire. And then they won't be able to defend the gates from us, and we'll go walking in. And that's exactly what happened.
Yeah.
Like,
crafty son of a bitches.
Right.
Little flaming missiles.
Yeah. And going back to, you know, yes, if you want to go for the Sea Raider, yes, you should definitely be good at navigating sea and just be good with the ship. And that won't really... That leaves a lot of room for... Just doing buck fucking wild action movie shit with a boat.
Yep.
I'm not even kidding with this. When King Harold was leaving from the Byzantine Empire, he left kind of under not so great support. He had basically escaped.
Mm-hmm.
He'd been taken prisoner, escaped, swung loose, whatever. And they were going to sail out of the harbor, but the Byzantines had looped a chain between the harbor out, the two forts in the harbor outing. So King Harold was like, all right, cool. Put everything in the back of the boat, including yourselves, when we get close to the chain. Very quickly. Like, okay. They motherfucking ramped their boat over the chain like fucking, like, Viking Age Fast and the Furious shit. Just wham! And it worked. You can do Looney Tunes shit with your Viking Sea Raider or Barbarian Sea Raider in the Indian Pathfinder. It won't, like, and you can literally point, like, this shit happened in history, GM. Let me do it.
Take examples from history. There are so many fucking amazing things that Vikings have done over time that...
Just because they fucking could.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yes, they liked violence. They were very violent, brutal people, but they were open to talkies.
Yeah.
To resolve conflicts and stuff like that, too.
If you ever want to see complicated politics, look at tribe to tribe interactions.
No fucking kidding.
That shit is straight up like Game of Thrones tier level.
I don't go that far, but it's certainly a bit of a headache. You know, honor that tier, blood that, blah, 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 blah. It's like, oh my God, just fucking get it over with already. We got shit to do. Like what? Like raid! There's a lot of things you can do with your Berserker and your Raider. We've gone on for a bit now.
Yeah.
But hopefully this has given you all a decent starting part as far as the role-playing side of your Barbarian character.
Indeed.
But again, as always when we talk about character creation, absorb pop culture and media and anything creative, be it fiction, nonfiction, whatever, that fits in line with the kind of character you're going for. You're not only your GM, but the rest of your party. Indeed, you will thank yourself for fleshing out your character just to that extra degree to make the campaign feel more lived in and alive. And more memorable. Yeah. But I think that's about all we got on the Berserker and the Raider.
Yeah.
So hopefully, again, we've given you a good starting point. And as always, thank you so very much for listening to yet another episode of General Nerd Sense. And wherever you're listening to us too, be it iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, wherever, do not forget to subscribe if you have not subscribed already. And if you've got any suggestions or requests for future topics on General Nerd Sense, Lore Council, or Loose Brews, head on over to our Facebook page, shieldwallproductions@facebook.com. Oh.
Or hit us up on Twitter at the official SWP, whether or not you want to send us ideas you have for Viking characters, want to just share any Viking experiences you've had, or just want to shoot the shit and talk, I'm more than happy to do that as well.
Indeed, and just a friendly reminder, shield bearers, we've got merch on Teespring, teespring.com/stores/shield-wall-productions. We got both men's and women's t-shirts, a hoodie, couple of stickers, coffee mug, phone cases, and of course, the literally angrily demanded "Hey Patrick" shirt. The first of, I'm sure, a line of running podcast joke shield wall shirts.
Yeah, and if you want to show your love for Vikings, our shirts literally have a shield on their back that are Viking shields.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, anyway, good news on that one. But as always, thank you so much for listening once again, and we shall catch you next time. Doodles!